Well, it was the off week for the Ohio State Buckeyes this week, but still plenty to talk about in Ohio State football land and Big Ten as well. And to do that with us on the Northwest Ohio Orthopedic Sports Huddle from the Frickers and Finley and 11warriors.com OSU football writer Eric Sager. Eric, how are you doing?
Good, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing well. I know I enjoyed my week off, Eric. I hope you got to as well. I know you got to see some of your family. Anything else going on big this weekend for you?
Not too much. Went on a little quick vacation to Florida with my fiance and her family, so that was nice to kind of get away. And I don't know why I decided to go somewhere that was hotter, but it's nice to have some fall weather going on back in Ohio now.
Yeah, a bit of a rude awakening for you, I'm sure, coming back to Ohio from.
Yes, definitely it was.
Well, before we kind of get into stuff that's been going on this week, some news that you broke on 11warriors.com this morning from the recruiting trail. Three-star quarterback commit Danny Clark decommits from the program. He was committed as a freshman, so a lot of things have changed for him as the and with the team as well since then. How much do you think this really goes on to affect the Buckeyes recruiting-wise moving forward?
I don't think it's going to affect them too much. I wouldn't have been surprised if Danny would have stayed true with his commitment, and I think Ohio State would have really honored that and taken two quarterbacks in this class because the 2017 class now only has one quarterback, and that's Tate Martell. But what it really came down to was Danny just wasn't really a fit with his skill set and his size. You know, he's 6'3", 220 pounds, and he's kind of a pro-style quarterback. Not really a fit for Ohio State and what they do with the spread offense. But, I mean, he's a class act, and you really kind of have to feel bad for the kid because it was his dream to come to Ohio State for as long as he can remember. It just didn't end up working out. But to his credit, it looks like he's kind of keeping his future in the forefront and thinking about that as he decides to explore other options on the recruiting trail.
Looking back at this last week, last year we had JT's off week incident with that OVI, and this year nothing quite like that. I think your PSA kind of got through to everybody last week. However, one of the incidents, though, with the newest members of the coaching staff did find it into the news this week with co-defensive coordinator Greg Schiano. Apparently hit a bicyclist with his car last week. What more can you tell us about the situation, where it's at right now?
Yeah, the latest that I heard as far as the information was that the young man is a student at Ohio State, and he's in stable condition at the hospital, which is good news.
Yeah.
Just for him, because that's really an unfortunate situation and an accident with that collision there. Someone asked Urban Meyer about it on Monday if there was any update or what was going on with Coach Chiano's status, and he said that they're aware, but they can't really comment on it just because it's not necessarily a football related incident. It was on campus, but it wasn't at the football facility or anything like that. So it was really, you know, kind of heart-wrenching to hear that something like that happened, because it could have been potentially tragic. But as far as I know, and as far as everyone else knows, I think Coach Chiano is going to be in the press box on Saturday when Ohio State plays Rutgers.
Again, with this off week here, it really couldn't have come for a better time, I think, really, for the Buckeyes, who are kind of dealing with a couple of nagging injuries, especially on the defensive side. Dante Booker has been dealing with that knee injury against BG. Gary and Conley with his shoulder in the Oklahoma game. And it seemed like kind of a nice early reprieve before starting the Big Ten schedule. What's the outlook on some of these banged up Buckeyes going into the bye week?
Yeah, Gary and Conley should be good to go. Coach Meyer said on his radio show last week and a few times, I think on the teleconference as well last Tuesday, that he's fine. It was just a stinger, and they kept him out as a precaution against Oklahoma, which I think was the right move. They have some depth at that position. So, but getting him back is big, just because Garyon's a very good player, and I think he's one of the best corners in the country. So he should be good to go for Saturday. Dante Booker is probable with his sprained MCL. Urban Meyer said that yesterday. That's going to be intriguing to watch and how they kind of work him back in, because Jerome Baker's played very well in his place. He had that pick six against Oklahoma, and it's just been kind of all over the field and all around the ball. So those two guys should be good to go, but we'll see for sure about Booker on Saturday, because I think MCL sprains can kind of vary in terms of, you know, severity and that type of thing. So, and then Urban said that yesterday Noah Brown and Dontre Wilson kind of took an extra day off just with a sore foot for Wilson, and then Noah Brown with his sore leg. I mean, he broke his leg last year. So just kind of, like you said, like nagging stuff that they just wanted to give some of those guys some extra rest in order to hopefully have them 100% once they open Big Ten play.
Bye week here also gives the teams a chance to step back a little bit more, maybe address a few of some of the bigger issues that they might not be able to address as in-depthly as they wanted during the season. And one such issue that I saw you wrote a piece about was the number of penalties, especially on the offensive ball. First in the Big Ten, fifth in the country. How much of that can we attribute to just kind of the inexperience or youth of a team, or is that something more?
I think a lot of it is attributed to that. Except for, I think Billy Price kind of led the way offensively. I think he had a couple false starts and a holding call, just in terms of the offensive line and those type of procedural penalties, which that's a little surprising because he's a three-year starter and an all Big Ten performer. But I think a lot of it was just kind of the inexperience, and JT Barrett talked about it last week as well. It was just when Ohio State got a couple delay games against Oklahoma, and it was because they couldn't get guys lined up, and then they didn't have enough time to get the playoff. And he's like, some of my teammates are turning and saying, why didn't you call a timeout? And he's like, guys, we don't have any, you know? And I think it was just a little bit of those guys, a lot of the wide receivers were playing significant roles for the first time at Oklahoma. And that was a first game against a Power Five opponent as well. So it's, you know, it's kind of an easy excuse to make is all this inexperience. But, you know, Oklahoma Stadium was pretty riled up. So that kind of made a big deal out of that as well. So I think a lot of it is just inexperience. But if it persists this weekend against Rutgers, I mean, that's going to be a little bit more of a story because they're playing at home. They had an off week to get some of those things corrected. So there shouldn't be too many issues, one would think.
11 Warriors OSU football writer Eric Sager joining us on the Frickers Huddle Hotline, the Northwest Ohio Orthopedic Sports Huddle, live from the Frickers in Findlay on ESPN Radio 1430 WFOB and Mix 96.7 WBVI. Now, as fans of the Buckeyes, we got a chance to watch and take in a little bit more college football than normal. Let's start, I think, with the biggest news in college football over the weekend, and it's not even in the Big Ten. Les Miles out as head coach at LSU, not really surprising after we almost saw him get canned at halftime of a game last year.
Right.
2-2 to start the season. What do you make of it as a blue blood SEC team like that making a move this early in the season?
I think it had to be done just because of the way that LSU's recruiting has been just fantastic the last few years. I mean, they're in Louisiana and they are able to get some of the country's best players, and they have a Heisman candidate in Leonard Fournette, and they start the season with two losses against a couple teams that they should have beat. I mean, they should have beat Wisconsin. They're more talented than Wisconsin. And they should have beat Auburn. They're much more talented than Auburn. And I think Auburn's kind of in over its head because they don't know what they're doing with their quarterback situation right now. But, you know, LSU's offense has always been kind of a question mark the last few years. So I think LSU kind of made the mistake and kind of backed itself in a corner with how things happened towards the end of the season last year. Like you mentioned, that they were going to fire him during a game or then at the end of the season. And then kind of like the boosters and the fans were like, no, we actually want Les to stay and all that. But it needed to be done. And I don't know if they're going to be able to salvage much with this season. Just we'll see how Ed Orgeron does in his replacement as his replacement. But it's also going to be curious to see who they go after, because a report was out this week that they're going to talk to everybody. I mean, they're going to talk to Urban Meyer and Nick Saban. You know, might as well call them and ask them, because if you don't call them, then you don't know if they're going to say no or not. So it's a tough situation, and LSU is so talented. Their defense is terrific with a lot of speed down there. But, you know, it's a tough situation, but it's one that really the administration can only blame itself when they look in the mirror.
You mentioned the coaching carousel that's likely to be coming up here, especially with LSU. And I've heard people saying that the Texas A&M and USC jobs could possibly be open up as well this week. And, you know, of course, like you said, Urban Meyer and Nick Saban are two guys that always are going to get phone calls no matter what. You know, I don't want to ask you if you think he would leave, but is there really a situation out there that's better suited for Urban Meyer than Ohio State right now?
No, not a chance. I mean, he's got the Ohio State train going full steam right now. I mean, 53-4, and what is his fifth season now? Right. He won a national title, won a Big Ten championship. I mean, he's got – this is his first full season with his whole team, is his all of his recruits. So it's finally, for sure, his program, which we already knew about, you know, the first 4 years when he won 50 games. So there's really not a better situation other than Alabama, I think, right now for any coach, what they would want to do. But Nick Saban and Urban Meyer are not going to leave Alabama and Ohio State. It just doesn't make any sense right now.
And even Alabama's not that great because you have to deal with a, you know, with all due respect, a rabid fan base, and you're filling the shoes of possibly one of their best coaches of all time.
Oh, yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Kind of a loose situation.
Yeah, it's a little different than Ohio State just because, you know, yeah, Urban took over for Fickell, or took over for Jim Tressel as well, who is one of, historically, I mean, statistic-wise and wins-wise, one of the best coaches in Ohio State history. But, I mean, Saban's won 5 national championships now, and 4 of them at Alabama. And, you know, he's right up there with Bear Bryant as far as their two titans in the coaching history. So it is a little bit of a different situation. And I think with recruiting as well, the fact that Alabama's in the SEC and in the South, I mean, the SEC isn't as strong as what it used to be, but it's still in the South, and that's where the top players are. Whereas in Ohio is a hotbed for recruiting, and it's, you know, Ohio State is the school for the state of Ohio. Yeah. So, you know, I think Ohio State is kind of a better situation as far as recruiting goes, but you can't really say anything negative about Alabama either because Saban has won so much there as well.
All right, back to the Big Ten here. The biggest story we saw was Wisconsin kind of announcing to the country that they are not going to be taken lightly the rest of this season, going on the road and handling Michigan State like they did. I got to watch this game in Wisconsin with fans of both teams, and I don't think either one of them really kind of expected the game that we got. And it feels like the paradigm kind of shifted nationally, kind of changed, because Michigan State was everybody's, you know, lovable pick outside of Ohio State and Michigan, and now Wisconsin's kind of come out of nowhere. How much does this win sort of change how you felt about both of these teams, and does it change how we look at the Buckeyes' schedule now that our viewpoints of both have kind of changed?
Yeah, it changed a lot of how I looked at both of them. I thought Wisconsin, you know, like we mentioned before, they outcoached and outplayed LSU to win that game up in Lambeau, but, you know, I thought LSU was a little overrated, and now that Les Miles is out, that kind of changes everything there. But, you know, this was a big-time statement, I think, for Wisconsin. The fact that they won 30-6 at Michigan State, I mean, that's a big-time win. And I think it says a little bit more about Michigan State than it does Wisconsin, just because Michigan State's offense was terrible. I mean, Tyler O'Connor did not play well, the quarterback, and they gave up 30 points to a Wisconsin team who, you know, I'm not really sold on offensively yet. So it says a lot, and it definitely changed a little bit. Like, I kind of said, okay, maybe Wisconsin is for real now. You know, we'll see what happens this weekend when they go to Michigan. That's two really tough games in a row. But I think Ohio State fans kind of need to look at that game right now as far as kind of the one that's a little bit eye-opening, just because it's at Wisconsin, and it's the game is a week after Wisconsin is off. So they'll have time to rest up and prepare for Paul Christ. They'll get 2 weeks to prepare for Urban Meyer and Ohio State. So, because Ohio State's going to beat Rutgers this weekend, and they're going to beat Indiana next weekend. Both of those are home games. I mean, they're better than both of those teams. So, but the Michigan State game still holds kind of the same weight for me, just because they're the defending conference champions, and they beat Ohio State last year. Mark D'Antonio's beat Urban Meyer twice since he's been at Ohio State. So, you know, that game still is very important just in terms of the Big Ten East race. But Wisconsin has really surprised me, and it could surprise Ohio State in a couple weeks.
Eric Sager, OSU football writer for 11warriors.com, joining us on the Frickers Huddle Hotline and the Northwest Ohio Orthopedic Sports Huddle, live from the Frickers in Findlay, where their Wednesday special is a sirloin steak dinner for $5.99, and kids eat free all day, every day. Anything else we pull from the Big Ten this week overall after the first week of conference play? I know not every team played. Obviously, Ohio State, Illinois didn't play, but any other things that kind of stood out to you?
The fact that Iowa only beat Rutgers by a touchdown really stood out, but that was like the most Iowa thing ever. Rutgers lost it, two of its best players in that game as well. So that kind of sticks for them, just moving forward with Chris Ash trying to build something there. But, you know, Iowa won, and it goes into the win columns, and that's all that matters. And then the other thing is Penn State's not very good. Like, yeah, they lost 49-10 to Michigan, and I know Michigan is improved immensely from last year, even with Jim Harbaugh in his second year now. But Penn State, I mean, they just look bad, man. I think James Franklin's seat should get pretty hot right now, and I don't know if it will just because of everything that's gone on there, but Penn State is really not that good this year.
I also like how we've officially made Iowa an adjective for just terrible kind of old school football that, you know, doesn't really work in the this day and age.
Right. It was the most Iowa thing ever. I mean, and it's, I saw that they were struggling with them, only up 7-0 at halftime, and then 7-0 going into the fourth quarter. And I was thinking, you know, Kirk Ferentz, you lost to an FCS school the week before with North Dakota State. You know, you'd think your guys would be anxious and ready to play, and I don't think Rutgers is that good. So it kind of made you raise your eyebrows, but then you're like, oh, well, it's Iowa. It kind of makes sense when you think about it.
Kind of the Cleveland Browns of college football. You think about it, you get extrapolated out a little bit.
No, it's just something that's usual. It happens every weekend.
Yep. Yeah,
absolutely.
All right, well, this weekend coming up, it's homecoming for the Buckeyes, obviously one of the biggest games on their schedule. For someone that is going to their homecoming in the bustling metropolis of Bowling Green this weekend, or for those of fans that maybe haven't been down to Columbus for it, set the scene a little bit. It's one of the biggest alumni groups in the country, and they show out for this weekend immensely. What's the atmosphere like on homecoming weekend?
It's pretty busy. I will say that there's a bunch of events. I mean, I know some clubs that I was involved in when I was at Ohio State that sent me a few emails this week, just having some get-togethers on Friday nights, which I'm sure the alumni club is doing that as well, Ohio State and all of these other big-time groups. So campus is going to be busy the whole weekend. And the fact that it's a noon game, people will get up and they'll be tailgating like always, and then they'll stay because they'll have more time in the day once the game is over and do stuff Saturday night. So it'll be, I mean, campus is always packed on game days anyways, but the whole weekend I feel like is going to be even more packed just because it's homecoming, and it should be a really nice day as well. There's going to be a lot of alumni in the stands and with the band as well. They're going to do Script Ohio before the game, and Earl Bruce, former head coach, is going to dot the I. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Not too many people have done that that are non-band members. So there's going to be a lot of things going on this weekend.
Now let's look at the opponent, Rutgers. We've touched a little bit about them coming into the Shoe, and it seems rather fitting because they come into the homecoming game, and seems like almost half of the Scarlet Knights staff has connections to the Ohio State
right?
program. Most notably, of course, you've got Chris Ash, the head coach, who was just recently the co-defensive coordinator the last 2 years, and ironically now that position is held by Greg Schiano, the former Rutgers head coach. How much does that familiarity help or either team, or does it?
I think it helps to an extent, just because some of the players, like we talked to Tyquan Lewis and Chris Worley, two defensive players. We spoke to them on Monday, and someone asked that question as well. You know, like when you look at some tape of Rutgers as far as their offense, what do you see? And they're like, well, it's our offense. You know, it's the same thing we see every day in practice. And Urban Meyer said that on Monday as well. So, you know, that's just the familiarity, I think, is going to help Chris Ash to an extent. But Ohio State has a lot more depth and a lot better athletes than he has to work with right now. So it's going to be a lot on him as far as scheme up plays and try to get Ohio State out of position and score some points in order to try to keep the Scarlet Knights in the game. But, you know, I don't think it's going to help so much where it's going to be like a really close game and a low-scoring affair. I think Ohio State is going to be able to play well because they're refreshed from the bye week and all that stuff. But it does play a factor into it, the fact that, like you said, half the staff, I mean, the strength coach, I think the offensive coordinator, the head coach, defensive coordinator, all at one point or another coached at Ohio State. So it's pretty crazy to think about.
Well, you can read his stuff at 11warriors.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at Eric Sager. Eric Sager joining us again this week to talk Ohio State football. Eric, thanks again for taking the time to talk with us, and we'll talk to you again next week after homecoming.
Sounds great. Thanks, Dan.
We'll take a short break when we come back. More from the Northwest Ohio Orthopedic Sports Huddle, live from the Frickers and Finley on ESPN Radio 1430 AM WFOB and Mix 96.7 WBVI.